Hello, this is Scott Price for People of Interest on CKUW 95.9 FM. On June 13th, I talked with David Lavallee. David Lavallee is the director of the film White Water, Black Gold, which looks at the effects the tar sands has on our water and water systems. All right, this is Scott Price for People of Interest here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Right now, I'm joined with David Lavallee, who is a filmmaker who recently made the film White Water, Black Gold. David, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
So just explain to our listeners what the film is about.
Right. So I used to work as a hiking guide in the Canadian Rockies, and year after year I'd kind of noticed that there's quite a few changes happening to the glaciers there, and started to learn more about climate change and how we're causing it, and sort of had some epiphanies. So I what I decided to do was decide to find out more about the issue, and found out that we've got one of the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions in Canada in my own province in Alberta. So I decided to, and I also found out that I work at the headwaters of where they get their water from, and it's just a huge epic water withdrawal. So from the Athabasca River, where I work, and I work at the source, so I decided to go on a journey and find out more about it.
So what kind of changes, though? I mean, without giving too much, I guess, of the film away, what kind of changes were you seeing, like, that would warrant you making a film?
On the journey itself? So changes to the glaciers, for example.
Yeah.
For example, one of the things that happened to us while we were shooting was I actually fell into a crevasse about 30 feet, and I was on the summit of Mount Snow Dome, and anyone who does any glacier travel, knows anything about the mountains, knows that the summits of mountains, 3,000 meters, is generally a place where you won't find crevasses. You find them lower down. And so that was quite dramatic for me, because it sort of reinforced my need to go on this journey. And just because it's proof to me that, you know, warm temperatures are reaching the higher levels of the mountains, places that are normally quite cold, and opening things up. And as well, just noticing year after year I have to hike further with my clients to see some ice on the Icefields Parkway, and the overall volume of the glaciers is changing quite a bit. And yeah, so it was some of those things that sort of led me to start my journey.
Maybe explain a bit of the process from having the epiphany to then, I guess, gathering the people around you to kind of go on the journey and to film it as well. I mean, like who joined you, and talk a bit about that.
Right. So that was quite a process, especially for a first-time filmmaker. The approach I kind of took, I wanted to create something that was a really professional kind of film that would reach a lot of people. So I partnered with quite a few different people. For example, in Canmore, we're lucky to have some folks that, where I used to live, we're lucky to have some folks, Leanne Allison and Karsten Heuer, who did the film Being Caribou, and National Film Board film, and they helped me quite a bit, sort of figuring out how to craft a pitch to the National Film Board. And so I did that, and I went out and got some funding from various different places, and meeting, confirming participants for the film. So, for example, Dr. Sean Marshall from the University of Calgary, a glaciologist who speaks to the glacial mass issues and climate change in the Rockies, and other prominent scientists like Dr. David Schindler, who knows probably more than anybody else on the topic of the water impacts in the oil sands. So just meeting, connecting with lots of people like that, and it was quite a long involved process, lots of research, lots of time with my nose spent in books and learning about something that I didn't know anything about. So it was quite a fascinating process.
Now, the one thing I thought that was so interesting is when I saw the trailer for it, that, you know, this is something about the tar sands. So usually you think when you hear about the tar sands, you hear about, well, it's the greenhouse gas emissions and, you know, the oil production and oil companies. But it's interesting that you focus in on the impact it has on the water system, because and it's kind of pointed out in the trailer that it's water is something we need, it's everywhere, yet when you talk about this, the issue of, especially in the tar sands, that is certainly something that is glossed over, is the amount of water used in the tar sands. So could you talk maybe just a little bit about the impact of the tar sands on the water system in the well, I guess it affects all of North America, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so it's kind of the premise of the film is it's a nation's water in peril is what I call it, because if you look at the impacts on water, they extend from what I call a triangle of concern. So they extend from Inuvik, which, you know, the Beaufort Sea, to Hudson's Bay, to Kitimat, British Columbia, on the northern Pacific coast. And that's kind of my exploration. I started following an imaginary drop of water from the hydrographic apex in North America, which is Mount Columbia in the Columbia Ice Fields, where I work. And I followed that drop northwards to see what happens to it. And what happens to it on the Athabasca is you've got, you know, huge tailings ponds. You've got another form of oil production, oil sands oil production, called SAGD, which I explain in the film, which threatens, you know, some of the largest aquifers in North America. And if you follow that drop northwards, you know, you've got risks of tailings pond breaches, SAGD explosions, all kinds of things that can and have happened. Mm-hmm. And as if you follow that drop eastwards, basically on the North Saskatchewan is another river that's being impacted, and the water is being taken out of that, an important river for Saskatchewan and Manitoba. And there's 278% planned increase in the amount of water withdrawals out of that river, which is a river that's a third the size of the Athabasca. So that's a drop of water going east. And going west, it faces you know, pipelines and tanker traffic with the proposed Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline. So altogether, you put that together, and that's basically half of Canada's water.
Hmm. Wow. I'm pretty sure many people would be shocked to hear the wide berth of the effects, right? Mm-hmm. Now, do you think, I mean, well, I guess in a lot of ways, I guess in a sense of doing this is because in a lot of ways, like I was alluding to before, it's not really mentioned about water, especially the effects on water, and it's sort of this kind of feeling that, well, it will always be there. We will always have this abundant source of fresh water. What is, I guess, getting to the big question here? I mean, so what do we really have to, is it really that dire that we have to start protecting these, the water? Or is it something that we're going to be seeing like 30 years down the road where you're going to have major problems?
Well, I think one of the participants in the film, Dr. Schindler, talks about what he calls a perfect water storm. So numerous things coming together, climate change, you know, our history of drought. They know things about our history of drought now that we didn't know before that indicate that drought is the norm in the Western Prairie provinces, not the exception, and that the last century has been one of the wettest on record. If you look at it, it's really an anomaly. So when you look at the historical record, you realize, well, we're really not that water rich a country, in spite of, you know, this perception that that we are. And so the perfect water storm is all these things coming together. One of those things is an increase in industrial development. So we're seeing just massive, massive increases. They're talking about doubling the size of the tar sands, and already, you know, the water impacts are really quite tremendous. So it's just hard, you know, really. My understanding is watersheds across Western Canada are really under a full frontal assault, and we need to really look at this and have a national conversation about this as a country, because it doesn't seem to me we've started that conversation just yet in any meaningful way.
Mm. So do you hope that this, or do you feel that this film will be a push to that national discussion?
I certainly hope so. I think water is not often mentioned as one of the major impacts of the tar sands. Oftentimes we talk about greenhouse gas emissions and the fact that there are, you know, the oil sands accounts for more greenhouse gas emissions than all cars on the road in Canada. And we talk about those things, we focus on those things. But water doesn't seem to be a huge part of the discussion, the debate right now. We tend to be more focused on emissions and things like that. But all of these things are interconnected, and they're all quite, you know, all every single environmental impact on the spectrum, they're all extreme. The oil sands, it's, you know, it's a logging operation, it's a mining operation, it's a, you know, burning through Canada's natural gas operation. It's all of those things combined make this just a really heads up kind of industrial project for Canada to be embarking in. And yeah, so I'm hoping that it'll sort of kickstart a debate in our country about water specifically.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you talked a little about as you're going through the journey, reading a lot and meeting experts on these sorts of things. I mean, was it in some way comforting that you met a lot of people along the way who were at the very least conscious of this issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For example, there are people in the scientific community who are quite active at researching and doing all this sort of baseline studies and research on water that the government isn't doing. And they're quite vocal in their opposition, in their sort of pressure on the government to, you know, reinstate monitoring programs that Environment Canada has cut over the years, and sort of making the kind of research available to the public so the public can make their own sorts of informed decisions. And so I was quite pleased to see some people are quite active on this file. As well, First Nations people are quite vocal in their opposition, most of them with regards to, you know, the bizarre rates of cancers that are happening in communities like Fort Chipewyan and communities like Fort Mackay that are completely encircled by oil sands leases and have to deal with various things that happen as a result of that. And one thing that surprised me was I also managed to get some of the industry viewpoints and government viewpoints, and it was quite surprising to me how sort of adamant the companies are about the fact that they feel they truly believe they're doing some good things for the environment and doing good things for the economy and balancing things. And so just that sort of corporate view was how people could sort of justify activities without looking at the holistic bigger picture was also eye-opening for me as well.
Mm-hmm. So in a sense, when you talk about this corporate viewpoint, do you think it's do you feel like that sentiment that they were putting forth was sincere, like they honestly thought it, or you know, like what was your general feeling of that?
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. When they say things, you really get a sense they genuinely believe it. And myself, coming from a sort of a different viewpoint, a more holistic viewpoint, where I'm looking at everything, not just one individual plant, and looking also at, you know, societal impacts and how it's affecting our country and changing our economy, and I have a pretty different view, but it was great to hear their views and to put those views on film so that people could kind of hear their side of the story as well. But yeah, I definitely felt it was quite sincere and even almost you know, to the point of zeal in a way. In the way, you know, environmentalists, First Nations, different groups have really, really passionate views, and industry as well has quite passionate views that they're doing good things for the country, and so that's a view, you know, the viewer, the audience can either choose to share or not, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, moving forward with this issue, I mean, talk about a national discussion. It's also quite fascinating that, well, the Conservative government is very adamant about the tar sands, and as well as I know the Liberal Party, I know Michael Ignatieff, when he was the leader, was defending the tar sands. Do you think, does the pressure have to come from just the from the outside, or is there more lobbying that needs to be done? I mean, or is it just like this broad-based movement that has to happen for this discussion, or do you think you really have to zero in on politicians to really push to have a discussion, at the very least a discussion?
Yeah, that's a really good point you make, because I only heard one mention in the last election of the oil sands at all, and that was the NDP talking about removing subsidies from the oil sands plants and giving them to other industries instead. I think that water is far too important to be left in the hands of politicians. They don't know what to do with it, and really my sense is that the government is just grappling with this. They're surprised by, they're really quite taken aback by the international condemnation and how it was smearing Canada's reputation, and so they're kind of struggling. It feels to me like they're struggling. They don't know what to do with all this opposition, so they're trying hard to hammer home their points. But I think if the people lead, the politicians will follow. And I think what needs to happen is really sort of broad-based cultural change, just sort of a growing understanding that as human beings we live in a biosphere, and one of the really important things in that biosphere is water. And that substance is being abused more than any other, it's something we need more than anything else, but it's being abused more than anything else. And I'm hoping if we sort of start a movement, a broad cultural movement that has as its core sustainability, and not just as a buzzword, but as an actual way of life, once we can do that, then the politicians will have no choice but to kind of step in line and do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about the broad based movement, and you kind of made the point about not just having kind of platitudes about it, but you talked about cultural change. I thought that was kind of an interesting point, because a lot of the environmental I wouldn't say movement, but a lot of things with environmentalism are very like, oh, here are little things you can do, turn off the water when you're brushing your teeth or yada, 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 right? So you're talking more about, rather than, don't use plastic bags. I mean, you're talking about more of this kind of a shift mentally within mm-hmm. how we do things, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. And those are examples of some things that many people do. They feel good to do and that kind of thing. And I think, people from all, it's kind of hard to argue with those small actions. They're really positive things, and people from all walks of life would probably agree with you and get behind that. What people won't necessarily get behind is a huge societal change. And if you look at problems like climate change, deforestation, the changing carbon balance on our planet, wide variety of environmental ecological catastrophes we face, these kinds of sort of small incremental changes are not enough. I mean, we need to really pull out all the stops. And when you start mining your oil instead of drilling for it, that's an act of desperation. That's a society that's on the ropes. There's not, if you don't believe we're running out of oil, then why are we mining it? That's a clear indication that we're in the bottom of the barrel and our society runs off oil. So that's kind of, disconcerting to say the least. So the kinds of changes that I'm hoping to bring about and kind of movement I'd like to sort of start and create is just so much larger than these small incremental changes that make us feel good.
Yes. Now, you just mentioned the bottom of the barrel, and I thought a little while ago, I think it was last year, there was a book put out very pro-tar sands, and the author, I forget his name now, but he basically was arguing like, look, well, would you rather support a government like Saudi Arabia or Nigeria, who there's no doubt undemocratic, brutal governments, or would you rather support the oil production in Canada, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of, as a way of sort of his critique on the whole environmental movement's critique on the tar sands. Mm-hmm. What would be your response to that?
Yeah, I think that's Ezra Levant, Ethical Oil, you're
mm-hmm.
referring
yes,
to?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Controversy Entrepreneur, that's what he calls himself. Interesting title. So basically the problem in Saudi Arabia is the geopolitics. The problem in Alberta is the geology. So, but they both create different kinds of problems. Ezra Levant kind of gives us a dichotomous view of the world where it's either good oil or bad oil. And I would go further and say that's not really the question. The question is it oil at all? Is oil the solution? because regardless of where that oil comes from, you know, we fight wars for it. We destroy environments with it. You know, every single place in the world that oil exists, which is just about everywhere, it creates all kinds of havoc. So what about, you know, what about creating wind farms? What about wind, solar, tidal energy? What about, you know, they can make oil out of algae now, and, it, you know, they can grow it in the deserts of New Mexico, a land that's useless for anything else. And the break-even point economically is when oil is at $80 a barrel, this stuff is economical, and oil's at, I think, 130 or something right now. So trash to gas systems, or you can basically, you know, if we switch our cars to electrical, and we can use our trash to make electricity and run our cars off trash, basically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the answer. And he, I know he'd refer to these things as utopian. That's the word he uses. And but I mean, the, you know, already there's countries in the world like Norway, Denmark, that are, you know, getting 25% of their energy from non-carbon sources, so renewable sources. So, I mean, you know, in Canada is only 1%. So obviously we've got a lot of ground to make up. So, and I think, yeah, his arguments are just complete non sequiturs, and they don't lead to a long-term sustainable society. So,
Yeah. Well, David, thank you for coming on and talking about your film you made, as well as some of the issues. There's so many big issues, actually, within this film. So if someone wanted to maybe look up the film, or maybe more things about you, where could they do that?
So I've got a Facebook page, Whitewater Black Gold Documentary. Pretty soon I'll have a website online, whitewaterblackgold.com.
The film Whitewater Black Gold will be screening on Thursday, June 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Unitarian Church, 603 Wellington Crescent, as well Friday, June 17th, 7 to 9 p.m. at Sam's Place, 159 Henderson Highway. For People of Interest, I'm Scott Price.